This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shelp.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are theater geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. Today's topic is all about auditions, and everybody in community theater, if you're going to be on stage, has to go through an audition. And this was something we were talking about and decided that maybe we ought to talk about it in front of you, in front of the microphones. And it was...
Because it can be a harrowing experience.
Yes, it can be. And
I think it always is.
And it can be a harrowing, but there are a few things that you can do to kind of guarantee that it doesn't work out well.
Oh, yeah. And, for sure.
And
that's
so,
if you're self-destructive.
If you're self-destructive. Mm-hmm. And so I had put together a kind of a list of things, and we can kind of start with those, of ways that actors can kind of blow the audition in a community theater. And one of them, and the first one really, is to be late to the auditions.
Yeah, it kind of drives me crazy as a director. I don't know about the two of you, but man, to have somebody walk in late, like an hour late to an audition when the called audition time is 7 o'clock. Now, every theater does auditions differently. And some people schedule times for their auditions.
Right.
But here at our theater, specifically, we have a specific time that you arrive. And mm-hmm. and our audition process is set up based on that. You know, we split people into groups, and we do different things at different times. And if you're late for that, then it's very difficult to move you into a group. So the only people that really have an excuse usually are first timers who don't know what the audition process is.
Well, and that's true, we have people show up late. I mean, show up, you know, 15, 20 minutes in. The problem is, and it's maybe a little, maybe it's a little bit less of a problem where you're doing the splitting people up into groups, but
You only do for a musical.
Yeah, right, for musicals.
That's true.
Yeah. So on a straight play, then you have people getting up and reading different segments. And if someone comes in about, you know, a half hour late or something, you've already read some of the segments that you're going to read for that session already. And then this person wants to come in, and then you got to like, oh, let's back up, you know, because they want to read for Marie Antoinette too. And then you put somebody up there. I don't know, Marie Antoinette's in a play.
I think it's telling too. You know, if the audition call is 7 o'clock and somebody shows up at 7:30, what's that going to also bode for their attendance at rehearsal?
Well, right. Let me just tell you, I go way, way, way back here when auditions used to be from 7 till 9.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you walked in during that time period was fine. You could audition. You did not have to be here at 7 o'clock.
Oh. Mm. Well, there you go.
Yeah. So it has changed.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, what I say is, like, I will pick 4 or 5, you know, portions of the play that we're going to read. And then we go through one of them a number of times. And then I really hate to kind of back up. And you're already, and from the actor's standpoint, you're already forming opinions, right?
Forming opinions about what?
About people on stage. I mean, you've already got, and then there's somebody new comes in, and maybe you've already kind of said, well, that person's good for this part, or that, you know, I don't know.
No, I don't agree with that. You should not form an opinion until you hear everybody read that wants to read.
I realize that, but you almost can't help it sometimes.
Well, try. I mean, you know. You're saying that if you hear one or two or three people, by that time you've already decided who you want to play the part?
No, I know you haven't decided, but you're at a point where you know you're starting to think, oh, that person looks good in that part, and then I mean, I think it affects how you perceive the person who comes in later.
So, well, I think it's interesting. Marcia is telling me to loosen my sphincter.
Exactly.
Uh-oh.
Not be so uptight about that.
Exactly.
Oh, well, gosh, maybe any of the stuff we're going to talk about today is going to be that.
No, but I think
way.
The fact that if somebody comes in late and wants to read for one part and you've already read all that, then you should say to them, well, then you'll have to stay afterward because we're not going back over that right now.
Okay.
But it's like, do you ever really, you know, I've never seen that happen to where you've read 5 or 6 people for a part, and then you read the same things over and over and over again, and you get kind of sick of hearing them, actually.
Right, you do, you do.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just, and I'm not saying that that's wrong to say people there at, should be there at 7 or whatever time.
Right.
I'm just saying it has changed over the years. There used to be a window of opportunity to, in which to audition.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure today most people do it the way that we do it now, which is be here at 7 and sit in your place and no outsiders can listen and whatever. I mean, I assume we do that, right?
It's pretty much a closed process, yeah. So it's we hope it is, and that kind of leads us into another issue, though, doesn't it, about it being closed?
Yeah, auditions because I remember we had a director here at one time, and you were all in the lobby, and he was in the green room with an assistant or whatever, and you went in one at a time to read, which, you know, in a way, I think is kind of good because then what you're doing in there is your own.
Mm-hmm.
You're not listening to 7 other people and thinking, oh, that sounds pretty good. I guess I'll do that.
Right.
Although maybe that's not such a bad thing. But anyway, doing it that way is strictly individual.
Yeah, people who come late miss out on that. I mean, they don't get to see other people.
Yeah.
Well,
you
know, if that's the way they're doing it. And it may or may not be, that may or may not be the way it's done, depending on the theater. But
what I like as a director, I mean, now we're talking about the audition process, but what I like as the director is to watch an actor walk up on stage after somebody has given a really interesting reading and take it a different direction. So that's, I mean, that's always been something I've been, so that actually sometimes will make me look more at that next actor, even though somebody gave me a really good reading. It's like, oh, hey, but this person who could have gone with that same reading because they just saw it has taken another choice, has made another choice. And then you see, well, gosh, they can make choices, which I like.
Right.
So that's something I do like at auditions, but that's not what we're talking about today.
Okay. What about?
But what I was thinking was, it kind of leads into, you know, we were talking about the closed audition process and about how sometimes people bring people with them to auditions or distractions, like a baby or a child or a boyfriend or a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And that can be a real detriment if like you said, they're spending more time.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a date. You know?
Okay. I've never seen anybody bring a baby or a dog or anything.
I have. Well, not a dog, but I've seen people bring babies.
To me, the thing is, normally, I think if someone is going to bring somebody, it may be just that they need support.
Well, sure.
You know, auditioning, no matter how many times you do it, it's a scary process. And maybe there's somebody that comes with you that would sit in the back of the auditorium, and you know they're there and you know they're rooting for you. And so it's easier for you to get up and do whatever you have to do.
Right.
I can't see bringing, just like I can't see bringing babies or toddlers to a performance.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see doing that to an audition. But if you have a third party who's not going to be auditioning, who's just there for you, I don't see anything wrong with that personally.
No,
as long as just my opinion.
But what we're talking about right now is people who come in, they sit with their person, they have a conversation throughout the audition. That's what we're talking about here.
No, that's,
I mean,
think
wouldn't
that's
that
wrong.
That would affect you?
That would affect me. Yes.
Yeah. Somebody who's more interested in their cell phone,
right?
And less interested in the audition process
while
itself.
Well, we've had cast members who you're afraid they're going to miss a cue sometimes because of or miss an entrance because they have got a game going,
right?
You know, we had it, a recent show, as a matter of fact. But it's kind of, you know, but the same thing with auditions is, you know, if somebody's just kind of like just slow on the uptake because they're really focused on other stuff,
mm-hmm.
it really can hurt you a little bit. So, okay, the other another one on my list was to not be familiar with the play at all. I don't think you have to have necessarily read it cover to cover, but it would be nice if you had some sort of an idea. And there's really no excuse to not know in general. You know, you can find a synopsis online. You can find information about a play without having read it.
I'm playing devil's advocate, and you can assume that everybody has a computer.
Yeah,
but also if they're here for auditions, it means that they've seen the audition notice somewhere, either in the newspaper or on an e-blast or of some nature. Well, most theaters make the scripts available for perusal prior to the audition. So there's, you know, if you really want a part, and you should come prepared. And one of the ways you come prepared is by calling and saying, hey, we'd like to make an appointment to read the script.
Okay. Now that's what, but that's what you would call a cold reading from the script,
right,
rather than having somebody. Which would you prefer when you're directing something? To have somebody read from the script, or have somebody do a prepared minute and a half monologue?
Well, I'm not saying preparing a monologue from the script. I don't mean
from the script. Yeah. I mean just preparing a monologue.
Everybody's different. I mean, some organizations do auditions differently. Some organizations go by a prepared monologue first, where they set a scheduled time for the person to come in and read their monologue and or to sing a song, and then they do a callback situation. So every theater's different, and it just depends on where you are. I mean, I think that you can get pretty much the same quality or the same idea of what somebody can do based on a cold reading. In fact, sometimes cold readings or cold singings, I think, are more important in an audition.
Right.
Because I've been through a situation where somebody had a wonderfully prepared monologue and song. They won the audition for a summer of summer stock, got to their location to start rehearsals, and could not sing anything other than their audition piece.
Yeah.
And so because they had trained, but who knew that they had pitch problems? Well, you can work those things out when you're working with a vocal instructor.
Right.
But you can't work them out when you're in the middle of trying to get a show up in 2 weeks.
No.
You know?
No.
And so if at an audition you did a cold reading and a cold song, you know whether or not they're able to pick stuff up quickly.
Right. Right. Well, what about people who learn, this is a little off of our track a little bit, people who have learned the songs from the album.
Yeah.
From the movie album.
Oh, yes.
As opposed
We've
to
all
the,
been there.
Yeah. Well, they
can't quite ever get away from that when they perform.
Well, it just depends on what character they're playing, I guess.
Yeah.
But in a way, that's one of my problems with auditions, though, because if you come to an audition thinking that you know the song, and you take the music and you put it aside, and then you sing and you're not singing the right words and you're not singing the right melody, what does that tell me you're going to do during the rehearsal process and during performance? You know,
right?
Because I just had that happen in an audition,
right?
Where somebody had the song in their hand and said, "Oh, I know this," and they didn't even read the sheet music, and they didn't even know that the words weren't the same as what they were singing and what they had learned, because it was a different song, basically.
Different version or something. Yeah. Well, and of course, things are cut differently for movies as opposed to even original cast albums aren't always accurate because the shows do change sometimes.
Yeah, they do.
So, speaking too softly, this is just basically not having any projection, which means you really don't have any presence.
Well, I'm going to look at the devil's advocate today.
What?
Speaking too softly.
Yeah. Oh, awful. Awful.
Oh,
I
well, then
it.
We're all in agreement on this
oh,
one.
Oh, why would you think I would want people to speak softly?
No, I'm just giving you a hard time.
No. And that, as a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why when I go to cover something, I prefer to sit in the back of the theater rather than in the third or fourth row where they usually put a reviewer. Because if I can't hear in the back, then everybody around me can't hear. And that's not fair to think that you have to sit in the first several rows in order to hear what's going on the stage. Sure. And I think that's something that, and it changes, I know that, from an empty auditorium to an auditorium that is full. What your ear perception is changes. And that's why I think it's really important to have someone check that from all sides and all areas when you're in rehearsal to make sure that whatever you're doing is going to be heard.
Right.
In other words, if somebody is singing and standing right behind the orchestra, it's different than when they're really on the other side of the stage.
But one of the ways you can fix that is that the audition is to make sure that people are projecting their voices.
Oh,
and if they continuously don't project, it's and if you give them notes on it, it's like because a director should, if they're hosting an audition, should be willing to say, "I need for you to do this next time," or "I need for you to do that," or "Could you try this?" And and so if they don't bring their vocal volume up, then you know that they're probably not going to be able to do it much during the rehearsal and performance time either.
Yeah, that's true.
And
another reason,
that problem, Jim.
Most
people
of us
always
haven't.
Tell me to tone it down.
It's another reason why a lot of us, sit in the theater when we audition in the worst possible acoustic spot, because then if you can hear them in that acoustic spot, everybody will be able to hear them.
Right.
So
well, that's true. And people don't project they I don't think they really have a capability of being in a being in character. I mean, it's just if they're going to be up there like this the whole time and just talking really softly, they and I, some of that is training, of course, too, because of using microphones in high school productions and things like that. They don't think they have to put forth any volume, and they're not taught correctly that way either. So, and it's a bad habit.
It is a bad habit. So, and the other, you know, and it kind of just leads itself right into another issue that I have at auditions, where people will come to the audition and they don't give you any kind of character, partly maybe because they haven't prepared, they don't know the script, they don't know the characters, but, you know, and then they stand up on stage and they're quiet, or they stand up on stage and just read from the script. And it's like, well, you know, I could talk to you and hear your voice. I need to see how you might play a character.
Right.
So I need for you to be a little bit more involved than just reading from the script.
Or they don't, or they don't move at all. I mean, that, I've seen people really try to, even with a script and something new, try to like walk a scene a little bit, you know, and or get, you know, get close to someone that they're talking to, or try to interact physically a little bit, you know. I mean, they can't do everything, obviously, but it does show that they're willing to experiment and take a little bit of a risk. So which brings us to another thing, which is if you're in the audition and you don't take direction from the director, that like if the director says, could you be a little louder, could you maybe be angrier, could you show me a little more I don't know, something, you know, something about a character, and you come back with exactly what you did just before, and we've seen this happen, right?
And what
that says is that you may not be able to take direction during performance either.
Exactly. Or during the rehearsal. And it's not always the case. Some people are, well, you know, we were talking about, you can be just scared to death when you come to your audition.
Wow. Yeah.
But, I mean, it does, everything that you do in an audition ends up, it's a reflection to the director, or on you for the director. And if you can't create a character, or you can't do something just a little bit different, if asked, then it does make the director have to stop and say, will I get what I need from them during the rehearsal process?
And now I'm sure from now on you're going to have people coming in to your auditions being off the wall because John wants something different. You know, that's always a danger. I know people that do that.
Right. Here's one that you really can't do anything about once you're in the audition, but it has, it affects you. And it's just basically the whole issue of having a reputation for being difficult to work with.
Oh,
and you
really?
Can't, I mean, directors talk to each other. And they know, especially in community theater, people know who's difficult and who's going to show up and, you know, just be a problem person.
Sure.
And it doesn't help you once you walk into the audition, but it does help you if you keep that in mind, that with every cast you work with, even if you're dealing with a director that you don't like, you know, it's not a good idea to be troublesome. You try to do the best thing you can. Right. I mean, it's not, you know, some people are impossible, I suppose, but you can't.
Well, director
Marsh is looking at me.
Yeah, really.
Directors impossible. May Pop. Talk, you know, but also theaters talk. I mean, I go to see shows at other places. I talk with other directors at other locations and actors, and we encourage actors to go to other auditions. If they see a show coming up that they think they might be interested in doing, they should go. Right. They should audition and explore. And but every once in a while, you know, somebody will call and say, hey, we had so and so come over, and what do they like to work with? And you can be honest, or, you know, and usually we are honest, you know, or they're great. Oh, they're awesome. You know, or we had problems with memorization, or we had problems with
you know, and that works. That works to some degree, unless you take it so much to heart that you don't consider someone who might be really right because they have a reputation for being difficult to work with. I mean, I saw that happen quite recently, where the director consulted with someone else who had worked with these people, and I think ultimately made the very wrong choice for the character. And it was a major character. And so the whole thing just kind of went south, you know? Yeah. So, you know, it's good to ask somebody's opinion, but in the long run, you have to go with your gut.
Well, that's
you
true.
You really do.
And I mean, I've, you know, I've had the experience where someone's been told to me that they were difficult or they were difficult. And they had been a problem with in other shows. And from their reading, I cast the person. And I thought, oh, that's great. And then after the fact, I being told, wait a minute, you're going to have big trouble here. And so I said, you know, I'm going to make sure that this person does the best job she can do. And it was kind of like I took that almost as a challenged kind of thing. So directors can do it. I mean, you can turn something like that around with a certain amount of patience. I'm not saying that you do it on purpose necessarily, but you can.
But still, at the audition, I have to tell you, if I'm sitting there and I know that I've had issues with that person in the past, it can make a real difference in my idea, even if they're right for the part. Because if I know that I'm going to have issues inside my cast, we've talked about this before. It might be better off not to have that person in your cast because at least you have a cast without issues.
Right.
Well, and you do get a sense sometimes of, you know, who can work.
Because we're all here in the long run. Not only are we here to produce a show, but we're here because this is how we do our fun. This is like our playground.
Right.
You know, so it really is. And so, you know, everybody coming to the table, we all want to make sure that it's a very positive and an enjoyable experience because we're not getting paid to direct and to act and to, you know, it's just what we do for the love of it. So we have to make sure that the process is a good one for everybody.
Right.
Well, a casting director by the name of Paul Schnee, and I have no idea who this guy is.
Well, it's Paul Schnee.
What's that?
It's Paul Schnee.
Paul Schnee. I guess that's who he is. Said he was interviewed in Backstage magazine, said that one of the things that drives him nuts is that an actor will get up for an audition and say, well, I've got a cold, so I'm not going to be singing too well today. Or I hope you understand if I crack that I just got over pneumonia or you know, something like that. And his point is, don't do that because it sets the director up to look for, you know, a problem, or it's just like you're making excuses, you know, it's, you know, and maybe you'll be fine. Yeah.
You know? And it could be true, but you know, it could be, oh my gosh, they just got over pneumonia, you know, but
right.
But it also can just be a real red flag. It's like, ugh, another excuse, you know?
Yeah. No problem.
I mean, it can be, you know.
Okay, well, that kind of wraps up that topic here. We're about 20 minutes in. You're giggling at me here.
It's wrapped.
It's wrapped. It's wrapped.
Definitely
wrapped. Okay. please be sure to go to the website. You can listen to Theater Geeks at theatergeeks.com. You can listen to us on Stitcher, at iTunes, and all kinds of places like that, at the Blueberry Network as well. And you can also... be sure to stop by our store at the Theater Geek store, theatergeeks.com/store, and where you can get things like hats and mugs. And what did
I bought my mug.
You bought your mug,
yes,
at Theater
I
Geek
did.
Store. Okay,
I bought a little Theater Geeks T-shirt for a friend who just had a baby, and the baby is now wearing a Theater Geeks.
Oh, cool.
T-shirt.
Oh, cool.
Yes, so they're
and you
also
and
good
you were
and
you finally supplied Dee Dee with a hat, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yes,
I
that's
did.
True. Because Dee Dee, we
was and a mug.
We had a long time,
a
long mug. Running problem that Dee Dee was
Dee
demanding
a
hat, and she
hat.
needed her damn
yep,
hat.
She
so
has her
you,
hat
she
in her
got
mug.
Her hat.
The mugs are really nice. I will tell anybody if you like a good cup of coffee in the morning,
it's better in the mug.
Well, yeah, and it stays hot. It's really good.
Yeah, they are. They do make a good mug. Okay, and what else is there?
There are teddy bears.
Teddy bears.
Yeah,
and,
there are teddy bears.
There are, and I bought Marcia a pair of underwear.
You did?
You lied, John Shelp. Oh my God, you are so bad.
All right. Okay.
Oh, terrible.
So yeah. Anyway, stop by the store, and we will see you next time on Theater Geeks. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shelp.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And nobody's gonna see my underwear. And we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.